You're listening to Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes at Lyric Opera of Chicago. Backstage at Lyric features in-depth interviews with the singers, conductors, and creative talents at one of the world's great opera companies. For additional podcast interviews, subscribe to our RSS feed or visit us online at lyricopera.org.
Mezzo-soprano Jill Grove is backstage at Lyric.
It's a very sexual piece. You know, it's an adult theme, and there is a lot going on. And, you know, Marlies Petersen is captivating. And I think that the more people see it, the more they will understand the story and get so many more elements.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Backstage at Lyric. I'm Roger Pines of Lyric Opera of Chicago. In this episode, I have the pleasure of speaking to the brilliant American mezzo-soprano Jill Grove. She's back at Lyric to sing Countess Geschwitz in the new production of Berg's Lulu after scoring a great success with the company last season in another new production, singing The Nurse in Strauss's Die Frau ohne Schatten. Before we play the interview, here's a brief synopsis of the opera. What's happened before Lulu begins is that Lulu, in her early teens, is found on the street and taken in by Dr. Schön. He's a respected newspaper editor. He gives her the wherewithal to have a decent life. When she's a few years older, he begins an affair with her, but then he chooses to marry her off to old Dr. Gall. In the opera's prologue, an animal tamer introduces his animals, and Lulu is the serpent. In the opera's first scene, when Dr. Gall discovers Lulu and a painter making love, he collapses and dies. The painter then marries Lulu, but she continues her liaison with Dr. Schön. But he plans to marry a young woman from a respectable family. When he tells Lulu he wants her out of his life, she's unwilling to give him up. He tells the painter about his affair with Lulu, and the miserable painter kills himself. At Lulu's insistence, Schön gives up his fiancée. He marries Lulu, although she continues to receive many admirers, including the wealthy Countess Geschwitz and Schön's own son, Alva. Lulu's behavior so enrages Schön that he finally gives her a revolver and orders her to shoot herself. She kills him instead. But even though Alva's horrified by that, he still can't resist his feelings for Lulu. She escapes the police by running away with Alva and Geschwitz to Paris. When she has to escape again, she winds up in London as a poor streetwalker. Alva is killed by one of her clients. Lulu brings home another client, Jack the Ripper, who kills her. Geschwitz is killed by Jack as well, and she dies declaring that she will be with her beloved Lulu forever. So let's go to the interview with our Countess Geschwitz, mezzo-soprano Jill Grove. I hope you enjoy it. I'm here with Jill Grove, who has returned to us to sing the role of Countess Geschwitz in our new production of Lulu. Hi, welcome back.
Hi, thank you.
I'm so interested in this character. She just has so many levels to her, and yeah. I'm wondering how you're feeling about her these days. We're a couple of weeks into the rehearsal period. Well, first of all, who is she?
Who is she? Well, she's, you know, as the name says, she's a countess. Whether or not she was by marriage or by birth, I don't know. We'll say by birth, just because of my own personal backstory. But she's a very elegant woman in society. She's very rich. She's very well-connected, runs across Lulu and falls madly in love, and pretty much devotes the rest of her whole life to trying to save Lulu.
And her feelings about Lulu, are they unconditional?
She would love to think they're unconditional, and I think that she's definitely probably the most heartfelt, sympathetic character. The only one that really never gets anything from Lulu, but is always there.
Well, how does Lulu treat her?
Well, a little bad. She treats her like any kind of straight woman that's got a little girl crush and has the little puppy dog that will follow her around and probably in private is very nice to her and very sweet and loves the attention, but then in public, you know, tries to act like she doesn't know who I am.
So, do we get any sort of response from Geschwitz to all of that? Or does she say, you know, let me be a doormat and I'll still love you? I mean,
she's pretty much let me be a doormat. They have one fight after Lulu has gone to prison for the murder of Dr. Schön, and I contract cholera to then, because she gets, Lulu gets cholera in prison, so we switch places and she escapes and I end up in prison. And after that, we go to a big party years later in Paris and we have a fight that, because Lulu is back in her element and ignoring me, and I'm like, okay, hello. What about all those lovely nights when we had cholera?
Now, speaking of which, all of that comes out in a film sequence, does it not? And you've been involved in it?
Yes, we videoed on Tuesday.
What was that like?
It was surreal. It was interesting. It was my first experience with any kind of movie acting or directing or anything like that. So, you know, everything's sort of out of sequence, and it's very specific, you know. But it was really cool.
Now, that was the intent of the composer, to have a film sequence as part
of the
opera.
Yes, it's definitely very clear in the score.
So, where did you do it? Did you do it backstage here at Lyric?
We did it all over the Opera House. I think there are some places that people will recognize in the house, and some are in the basement. We've used the kitchen of the Graham Room. We used the side stages. We've used stairwells.
And what's going on in it?
In it, you see her Lulu's capture by the police after she murders Dr. Shun, the trial, the judgment, being thrown into prison. Then you see me come and visit her in prison. It kind of reads that she comes up with this idea, and then me sneaking back in to rescue her from prison, and then Lulu being freed.
Now, to my ear, this music is awfully different from music we associate you with, whether it's Wagner, whether even the Strauss that you did last year. How did you respond to Lulu when you first heard it?
Honestly, I was like, what? I didn't really understand. You know, it is a very...
Challenging.
It's challenging to the ear, and it really does require a lot of concentration.
Now, you gave this sensational performance last year, singing the nurse
Thank
and
you.
Die Frau in a Schatten, and you've done all this, prior to that, you've done all this low repertoire, and suddenly there you are in Frau, and here you are in Lulu, doing some much higher stuff. I mean, sopranos have sung both of these roles, the nurse and Lulu, so how does that feel, especially as Geschwitz went at the end, suddenly you're floating up to God knows where, you get the last lines in the opera, so how do you respond to that with your particular instrument? What does that feel like?
It feels fantastic, as long as I remember that I'm not a soprano, and so those, you know, floating things up to Jesus will be, you know, the way I would float them to Jesus, maybe not the way a soprano would.
Now, anybody who knows the story of Lulu knows that you get done in by Jack the Ripper.
Yes.
Now, how has that been staged
yet? It has not been staged yet, no.
But is this the first time you've ever died on stage?
Yeah, it is. I think so. Other than being eaten last year by the people in Frau, which wasn't really as clear as I think the dagger will be from Jack the Ripper. But yes, this is certainly the first time I've been killed, and also the first time I've ever had, well, Azucena. I guess she has a last dying line, but this is certainly my last, you know, whole death scene.
Now, of course, the big question is, what are you wearing in this show?
I look good. I look great. It's very feminine. It's very elegant. It's very 1930s, sort of Marlene Dietrich period. It's very tailored, you know, really cool skirts, but then with like a tie, very tailored jackets.
1930s, right?
1930s. It's beautiful. I mean, really, it looks really great.
So if people want a reference, maybe they could go to that, what is it, Morocco? Is that Dietrich movie where she's in the tuxedo?
When she's in the tux. Yeah. And
so you have gowns too?
I have gowns. I have all gowns, actually.
It's
I don't think I have any pants. And the tops are all tailored and They look great.
Now, this is one of the most intense pieces that anybody could perform.
Yes, it is not for the kids.
So are you able to leave it at the theater, or do you find that you're taking it home with you?
I take some of it home. Mostly it just takes me a while to sort of decompress. The story itself is very intense, but the music is very intense, and the rehearsal period, what you have to sort of get yourself into to be able to really rehearse these scenes is not something that I can just, you know, 5 o'clock comes and I'm like, okay, let me just go back home. So it takes me a minute.
Now, she has, though, some of the most beautiful music in the opera, doesn't she?
Yeah, some of the most lyrical and melodic, if you can use that phrase with Berg.
Absolutely.
But yeah.
Do you recommend that people come back and see it again because they'll hear so much the second time that they missed the first time?
Yes, totally. I think it's certainly one of those pieces that the more you see it, because there will be a lot of shock value, I think. You know, it's a very sexual piece. You know, it's an adult theme, and there is a lot going on. And, you know, Marlies Petersen is captivating. And I think that the more people see it, the more they will understand the story and get so many more elements.
Now, you come from Galveston, Texas.
Yes.
Did you have any fantasies growing up of wanting to be a country western singer? Or
you know, not so much. I was a tennis player. I played
championship
tennis. Well, you know, in my little head, sure. And that's pretty much what I did and what I spent my childhood and young teens and high school doing.
Do you?
But music was not anywhere near me.
Have you kept up your tennis?
Oh, I try. It's hard on the road because you need
I
all these
imagine.
People. It's hard to keep up a whole world of it. But
now, you've said that you felt differently in the opera business initially because you grew up in Texas and that when you were first auditioning, you were encouraged when people said that you were different. Different mm-hmm. how?
I think different, definitely different vocally. You know, there's not a lot of really low mezzos, low-voiced women, whatever you want to call them. And so I definitely was not another Despina, another Susanna, another something. So there was that element of different. And plus, not coming from an operatic or musical performing background, I didn't have any of the glossiness that a lot of young singers have, especially entering programs and things. They've been groomed to do this, and I was not. I was groomed while doing. So, you know, I was just sort of this, just kind of fresh and didn't know what I was doing.
Did you have a person who guided you into the career or a couple of people? Because I know you went through the Houston Grand Opera program.
Mm-hmm. And well before that, I was at the Music Academy of the West in Santa Barbara.
Where you
which
met Marilyn
really,
Horne?
I met Nina Henson and Martin Katz.
Ah, I see.
I was in a period where she was not part of that.
Right.
I met her later in my career in New York. But I
those people were really
significant. Those people were definitely significant, especially Martin Katz, to say, you've got to get out of Texas. Go, you know, go to the university, go to New England Conservatory, study with Ed Zimbara. This is what you need to do. And then it's sort of mentors and people have kind of come into my life at the right time.
Now, in thinking about what you're doing now, this is the ring year, isn't it?
It is. It's a ring couple of years, yes.
So you start in L.A. and then you go to the Met, is that
mm-hmm.
right? And your role is?
I am Erda.
Earth Mother.
Earth Mother, yes.
What are the great satisfactions of being part of a ring, which is a piece that you've done here?
Mm-hmm.
What do you get out of it that really sort of stays with you and that's most valuable to you?
It's such an important piece, and to be a part of something that big and that encompassing is really exciting.
And these rings, ours and then LA's and the Met's, they're all very different, aren't they?
Yes. Well, I know the Met production. I don't know the L.A. production. I have heard rumors, and people have sort of explained what they're going to be. But I think the ring, the L.A. ring, I think will be quite interesting.
Now, speaking of which, I can't let you get away without asking you what it was like to work with Woody Allen, who made his who made his operatic debut in L.A.
Yes.
as a stage director with Puccini's Gianni Schicchi. I mean, inquiring minds definitely want to know.
No. It was surreal. It was, you know, you have those first moments when you meet him and everything goes through your mind. Like, oh my God, all these people he knows, Diane Keaton. And, you know, you're just like, oh my God. And then he just becomes the director and you end up to have some sort of working relationship. He's very quiet. He is very respectful and appreciative of what the artists have to bring, even though I don't know that he really understands in depthly what anybody's doing. He knows how to make a great picture, But he really relies heavily on the people that he casts to kind of come up with their own characters and their own thing. And then he'll sort of edit.
Did you have discussions? You and he talking about your character of Zita? And
I would love to say yes, but no, there weren't many discussions. No. He's not a talkative man. No.
But the production was very well received, wasn't it?
It was very well received. It was a great production. His concept of it and his sort of punchlines were really, really just spot on.
Did you have any sort of classic Hollywood experience backstage or at parties or whatever when one of your idols just sort of appeared?
Well, Martin Short, who was totally one of my comic idols, I love him. And he thought I was brilliant. So I had him say that a couple of times to me. and also Barbara Streisand came back one night. Now, she did not come to see me. She came to see my colleague, Sandra Rodanovsky, after her performance in Swore. But I stood really close to Barbara, and I saw her up close. It's just such a surreal experience to see stars who I look at, you know.
Now, something very exciting. On the personal side, you and your partner, Karen, are new moms.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So your son, Griffin, is 4 months old?
6 months
Six
now.
Months old.
Yep.
So how is motherhood treating you these days?
Motherhood is great. Motherhood is challenging. Everything that you would think it is, it is. You know, it's also just so much fun.
So they're with you on the road, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can go home. You can leave Geschwitz and actually come home.
And actually come home. You
Wonderful.
Know. Yeah.
You talked in Opera News Magazine about a baby boom in opera going on. Can you say a bit about what that means to you and your colleagues and where that sort of comes from?
I don't know where it comes from other than there's just a lot of people right now that are finding family and children and sort of life outside of the stage just as important. And I have many friends that are either new parents or just, you know, older parents that have numbers of kids, and you know, the whole just dynamic of things is different now, and I realize that there are, you know, are two different people in the world. It has nothing to do with race or gay or straight. It's just whether you have kids or not, and because your whole perspective changes, and you can talk to someone that doesn't have a child and as interested and as loving as they are, they don't have a clue. And then you talk to a parent and you don't have to say two words and they're like, oh yeah, I understand. Oh yeah, I get it. And you're just finding more and more people in the opera business are, and singers especially, are really taking the time to really know how important that is.
And figuring out how to create the time management,
yeah.
You know, how to manage your time through
it?
All of this.
Mm-hmm.
And are you managing? How are you doing?
It's a work in progress. Progress, not perfection. I'm doing pretty well, but it's good.
Do you play music for Griffin?
Karen plays a lot of music for Griffin. He doesn't really like to hear me sing. He's not all that. He doesn't like my Row, Row, Row Your Boat or Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star very much. He likes Karen singing, but he doesn't like me. It's too loud.
Anything else we need to say to our listeners about Lulu and the kind of experience it is?
It's very tangible. If you come with a really open mind and an open heart, the performances themselves are captivating, and I think that each character will sort of bring the audience in. But I would definitely recommend listening to the score a little bit, just a little snippets if you don't want to listen to the whole thing, just to sort of get a concept in their minds, because it's not Puccini, it's not Mozart, you know, it's going to be a little jarring.
And yet I want to emphasize that the beauty is really there.
Oh, it's gorgeous, gorgeous, yeah.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're
All
very
the best
welcome.
For Lulu.
Thank you, thanks.
You've been listening to Backstage at Lyric, the podcast that takes you behind the curtain at Lyric Opera of Chicago. For additional interactive content and to order tickets, visit us online at lyricopera.org.